You're listening to Crashing the Boards with Austin Johnson and Dave Popkin on Fox Sports Radio New Jersey. The guys are here to bring you the most comprehensive look at college basketball from Rutgers and Seton Hall to the national scene. Now, let's pass it off to our hosts, Dave and Austin. Take it away.
Welcome to Crashing the Boards with Dave Popkin. I'm Austin Johnson. And Dave, it's been a crazy couple of days. We're getting deeper and deeper into March. First and foremost, how have you been and how is life in Seton Hall world?
I'm good. I think I'm on game 54 of my year, something like that. It's been crazy. It's been the most that I've ever called. And then obviously, you know, watching hundreds of other games to get ready for those. And just for fun, like these NCAA tournament games, we've seen some really high level games. And except for maybe when they beat UConn by 15 or when they beat Marquette, this is the best Seton Hall has played all year. They steamrolled a good UNLV team at Walsh Gym in the third round of the NIT. They did the same to a pretty good North Texas team, and they came back and beat St. Joe's and dominated that second half in the NIT. So they are playing like a desperate team. Some of these guys do not want to end their careers. Jaden Bediako, this is his last year of eligibility. Al Dawes has saved their bacon on multiple occasions. Had three big threes in the game against UNLV. Had a huge game against St. Joe's. Easy guy to root for. Fantastic player and person. And it's been a recovery, really. An emotional recovery after they found out they were the second team out and felt like they got snubbed. They've been playing great, and it took Kadari Richmond even a game or two to get it back together, but his last game against UNLV was one of his most complete of his career. His passing, his rebounding, I think he was 7-for-9 from the field. He was doing absolutely whatever he wanted out there and proving that he's a pro. Now, what that means, I don't know. You know, is he a second-round pick? Does he leave? Does he come back? Does he go someplace else for NIL? I have no idea, really. But all I know is that he's playing his best basketball right now, and he's got to be opening some eyes. So it's fun, and I'm looking forward to getting on the plane today to go to Indianapolis with them.
Anytime that you can continue to keep your season alive this late in the year, it is commendable because it takes you digging deep and being able to go above and beyond in order to pull some of these victories out. And I know we'll get into this at some point in this show, just the deflating feeling of not getting into the actual NCAA tournament field. You have to make a decision right away. As soon as that information comes out, it's either you're going to lock in and mentally recalibrate, or you're going to sulk and, you know, feel as though you've been slighted. And then that carries over onto the basketball court. Well, it was the former for the Pirates. I think the best coaching job to date of Shaheen Holloway, because that messaging starts with him. And, you know, that also permeates throughout your team. And I think you hit it square on the head. A lot of these veteran players are acting as though they know that they have only one more opportunity potentially with any one of these games. So for them to come back and not only play well, but to dominate teams, it really speaks to not only the leadership within that program, but the mental fortitude of these players. So commendable basketball play by the Pirates. And one of many storylines, obviously, life in Rutgers basketball world is it's in a different place. Early ending to the season after ups and downs, and a lot of talk about, you know, what the actual program will look like next year, with I think it's up to 5 players who have put their name into the transfer portal, and Derek Simpson, now Gavin Griffiths, which was a surprise to a lot of people, Antoine Wolfolk, Cliff Amori being another one as well. So interested to see who Rutgers will bring in. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation and don't want to get into anything in particular until people's names are signed on the dotted line. But with that being a pivot, what do you feel about you know, everything that's going on basketball aside with this new recruitment process for players?
I think it's nuts. I mean, I think that the portal date should be pushed back until at least the Final Four or after the NCAA tournament. You know, coaches are trying to coach teams and, you know, poach players at the same time. I think players should be allowed to sign contracts, maybe multi-year contracts, so that if they're promised NIL money to leave a decent situation for what they think is greener pastures, that they actually get the money, because sometimes they're not getting the money. I think it's obviously the Wild West right now, and it's going to be hard for a fan base to fall in love with a player again, you know, knowing that 6 months later they could be gone. And, you know, I commented on the Seton Hall broadcast with Gary the other day, seeing Jeremy Hazell in the crowd and Jeff Robinson and, you know, Jerry Walker and some of these other people that are Seton Hall guys and are beloved there, you know. And, you know, Hazell might have his number raised to the rafters, and he can go there, and, you know, those people are going to help him and they're going to boost him emotionally. And he's hanging out, he's taking pictures, he's signing autographs. Now, you know, somebody that goes there for 6 months, do they have that connection? You know, do they have a home base like in their life, like you do at Rutgers? I don't think so, you know, and I think that's something that's lost and that will be lost in college basketball. It's something that Shaheen Holloway has at Seton Hall, obviously. He's a beloved figure. I think people relieved that he did not listen to Louisville, or at least take that job, and that they hired Pat Kelsey and he decided to stay at Seton Hall and to slug it out, you know, and maybe in a bottom half or bottom third of the league of NIL and try to overachieve as he has this year. So the landscape is very different, you know, and I don't know how it's going to shake out. And I guess the ultimate barometer of that is you look at like the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight over a 5 year period, you know, over the next 5 years. And you have to see, are there going to be any more St. Peter's? You know, are there going to be any more Princeton's? Are there going to be any more of these schools that can keep a good player for 3 or 4 years and overachieve because they have an old team against a team like Kentucky, you know, that goes out early? Illinois until this year had gone out early. You know, you get some of these schools that have blue chippers and they just don't have the continuity. So there's a lot to unpack there, but it's a little troubling. But that said, I'm still enjoying the sport as much as I ever did. I mean, the NIT have been good games this year. The NCAA tournament is, there's been some very good games this year. The Alabama North Carolina game was as high a level college game as you'll see, and we've seen a bunch of those.
True. I think everything that you just said, I agree with. And one commonality of a lot of the teams that are continuing to drive deeper and deeper into March and now going into April is the theme that they're old, they're seasoned. They are veteran-led groups. And we saw how difficult it was for Kentucky taking an early exit, trying to rely on that infusion of youth. So I think that, to your point, the days of the loyal son, you mentioned Jeremy Hazell, Jeff Rowe, Shaheen Holloway, and I played 4 years at Rutgers. Those days are long gone. And there definitely needs to be a new set of rules put in place to at least allow the universities to benefit from some of the resources that they put into these players so that they're not in a constant scramble mode year after year. But what that looks like, I like the idea of the contract. That's a new one to me. As well. And then also, not everybody who puts their name in the portal is going to be able to benefit from the process. So you're almost putting yourself in limbo as well. So more to develop on that end. What else are you excited about? Have you been in tune with any of the particular storylines throughout this NCAA tournament or the NIT Seton Hall side?
I think UConn's dominance, which we'll talk about with Donnie Marshall coming up in a little bit, Seton Hall, their comeback that we'll talk about with Jerry Corino in a little bit. Those are two big ones for me that I've been paying attention to. And just the fact that The Big East only got three teams in, but you have three teams that could be in the Final Four. So there's a lot to follow right now, and I'm enjoying all of it. I even check in on the minor tournaments, the CBI and the CIT. I'm a hoop head, and I like to see a lot of that stuff. But the thing that is intriguing to me that you talked about just a second ago, and I need to get your insight, and I know you can only say so much, and you may not even know the answer to this question, but what's going on with Rutgers? Because they have the top recruiting class, or one of the top recruiting classes coming in. The existing players have to know that they could be a part of something magical next year if they stayed. And I get that this year was disappointing, and I get there might be some other opportunities out there for some of these guys, but between the great crowd that they get to play in front of, terrific head coach, unless I'm missing something, and a great recruiting class coming in, why would all these guys leave? Half of the Rutgers roster has already put themselves in the portal. I don't understand it.
I think simply put, being around the team and seeing how each individual guy has contributed to either the success or lack thereof this year, it's hard to really, conceptualize it when you think about all those different factors that you touched on. Pykel and staff do a phenomenal job, I think, of developing guys year over year. So when you think about a Gavin Griffiths, a young guy that still has the benefit of developing year over year, and then also could be a potential future cornerstone if an Ace Bailey and a Dylan Harper it turns out to be one and done. It's mind-boggling. I think that ultimately a lot of the feedback from the fan base is like you're ducking smoke. Are you worried about playing time? Are you worried about your role not being that big? I think that could be a part of it. But I think that all in all, looking at this thing holistically, chaos is a ladder. And you have a ton of pandemonium of people leaving, but sometimes there is addition by subtraction, and the attrition allows for you to now go out and actually build out a team to your benefit to come in and complement, what these players will be able to bring, because you're not going to be able to win or go deep into the year relying on just the infusion of freshmen and what they can bring. You do have to come out and I think implement some of these veteran type talent who have been in these battles in addition to the talent that's coming in.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally understand that. And to further answer your question, one of the things I am excited about right now with college basketball is the women's game. They have not only Caitlin Clark, who I love, who I follow closely, and really want to see what she does this summer with WNBA and the Big Five offering her $5 million, Ice Cube stepping up and offering her the opportunity to play against former NBA men's players.
Great
This
marketing ploy, by the way.
it was. I mean, it's great publicity for the league. And if you're Clark, I don't know that you do the whole season there, but do you take some of that money prorated just for the exposure and for the cash, to go and play, against some of these guys in NBA arenas, before big crowds and national TV on CBS Sports Network? And I don't know how well she would do in a situation like that. These guys are amazing players, but
I'm glad you brought that up. And I was about to ask you that is I saw Captain Jack, Steven Jackson's initial response and phenomenal player, Caitlin Clark. Shout out to her for being able to warrant such a heavy price tag, and she's earned it. But what do you think that product would actually look like if it did come to fruition and she actually decided to go to the Big Five? You've seen a lot of higher level basketball. Do you think that these guys would even let her touch the basketball?
yeah, I do. I think that she'd be able to score a little bit because she could step out so far. They're not going to guard her 30, 35 feet away from the basket. So I think that she'd be able to rein some threes. But in terms of, her up, and she's a great passer. So maybe she would be a distributor in that situation. But on the other end, I think that, they would just beat her up on her defense and be able to score on her a lot. So, it's interesting. I mean, you go all the way back to like Billie Jean King against Bobby Riggs, Battle of the Sexes in the 70s with tennis, and that was different because you're not able to just like impose your physical will on somebody as much in a matchup like that. But in 3-on-3 basketball, you definitely do.
You can exploit mismatches.
Yeah. For that reason, I think that she probably won't do it. And that she's been looking forward to the WNBA, but I think that she can only make only like $100,000, $75,000, in the WNBA. She has millions of dollars in endorsements, which helps, you know, alleviate the sting of not taking the $5 million from Ice Cube. But that's how far she has come, and the women's game has come, and the ratings have been comparable to the men's ratings, and there have been some great teams and players to follow, like USC and Notre Dame and LSU and South Carolina and UConn, and you go all the way down the line, and the Iowa team, obviously. So, and some teams in the Big Ten that gave Iowa a fight. So it's been really intriguing, and I'll be paying attention to that down the stretch.
Women's college basketball is in a great place. Definitely a lot more impressions, rightfully so. And I think the future is also bright when you look at Juju Watkins and some of the other players coming up, you know, waiting on deck to take over that reign once Caitlin Clark does ultimately make a decision.
All right. So we'll take a quick time out, Austin. We'll come back with Jerry Carino from the Asbury Park Press, Gannett Newspapers, Jersey Jump Shot, all that good stuff. He covers basketball in the Garden State better than anyone. Donnie Marshall, former UConn player, now a star analyst for Fox. He's coming up as well here on Crashing the Boards on Fox Sports Radio, New Jersey. This is Crashing the Boards on Fox Sports Radio, New Jersey, and Fox Sports Radio, Jersey Shore. Dave Popkin, Austin Johnson with you. It's our pleasure to welcome onto the show an old friend who is a writer for Gannett, for Asbury Park Press. You can find him on Twitter at NJ Hoops Haven. And of course, he hosts the Jersey Jump Shot podcast, which can be heard every Monday with his co-host Steve Edelson. It's Jerry Carino. How you doing, Jer?
I'm good because I finally got a full night's sleep. It's hard to come by in March, fellas. I'm serious. Last night was the first full night's sleep I've gotten in, I don't know, a month. So great, actually. Thanks for asking. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It feels like the World Series or the baseball playoffs because these games end after midnight, some of them, which is a whole separate topic. But let's go into Seton Hall first. You and I both jumped on the Seton Hall beat, I think the same year, 2003.
That's right.
The Andre Barrett tournament year with Lewis Orr. And it's been a roller coaster, certainly. But this year has been one of the highs, I would say, for Seton Hall. I don't know if you had this note or somebody else. 23 wins, second most since PJ left 30 years ago. How can you put into perspective what this team is doing right now?
So anytime you follow sports, and there's a pleasant surprise, right? Those are some of the most memorable things. So, like, nothing really was expected of this Seton Hall team. And for them to win 23 games and to still be playing in April, they're going to play an April game for the first time since 1989. Now, we know the NIT is not the big dance, right? But still, it's a significant thing. Also, the way they've responded to being snubbed by the NCAA tournament, I think, is really galvanized the fan base. And the other thing is you've now seen proof that Shaheen Holloway's coaching chops translate to the high major level. We knew he coached, you know, did a great job at St. Peter's. Who could deny that with the once in a lifetime thing they achieved there? But now he's done it at the high major level, winning 23 games, a big deal. So it's been a surprise season. There's been a lot of positives, and it's been fun. And the team has been fun to watch, you know. It's a team with some unique players, some real talent, some cohesion, some toughness. Had things broken a little differently, we'll never know what they could have done in the NCAA tournament. But to see how the fan base has responded to them and the way they've played in the NIT and see the way the players have sort of grabbed that opportunity has really put the bow on what has been, like you said, Dave, one of the more memorable seasons. We've covered this team a lot when they've gone to the NCAA tournament and lost. And I said this when Rutgers finally got there in 2021, when they finally got to the big dance after 30 years, I said this to their fans. It means a lot more when you win a game than when you just, it's almost like you're not there when you lose that opening game or when you're not even in it. And so like Rutgers won that game against Clemson in 2021. And it really was a huge moment, I think, for the program and the basketball community. And so, you know, it means more when you advance in the postseason. So we've covered Seton Hall when they've been 0-1 in the NCAAs, and this just has a better feel to it. This is going to leave a better taste in everyone's mouth. So yes, the surprise element of it, the characters who were involved, the feeling that you might be building something with Holloway really has made this season, I think, different and fun from the compared to a lot of the others.
Somebody leaned over to me from the TV crew during a break during that last game against UNLV, and they said, would you rather win the NIT or lose in the first round of the NCAAs? And I pondered it for a while, and if you look at some of the really bad losses, like the 06 loss when they got wiped out by Wichita State in the noon game and they were on the plane by like 2:30 and it felt like they weren't even in the tournament, or the TCU game where Willard was on his way out the door and they got killed, I think I'd rather win the NIT. I mean, I love the NCAA tournament. It's the best, but this run has been fun and they're playing their best basketball right now. I mean, the UNLV game, when Dawes hit the three straight threes, I mean, they could beat anybody when they're playing like that.
So to go back to your question, Pop, it can't really be answered in a vacuum, right? I mean, of course, first of all, you'd always take the NCAA tournament bid, even if you have to stand on your head in Dayton. You'd always take the NCAA tournament bid over the NIT bid. But when you're looking at something in hindsight or in retrospect, and also when you're concluding context, right, I do think in this particular case, it has meant more to Seton Hall to have those games in Walsh Gym, have the community come together to play great, what might be a send-off for a bunch of these seniors. And so I do think in this case, yeah, if they had, look, they lost by 20 to St. John's in the Big East tournament. If they followed up with a clunker against like a Colorado in the first four, everyone would have been kind of like lukewarm or down on what happened. That's not going to be the case anymore. So in this particular case, the way it's unfolded, it has worked out better than them losing a first four game. I don't know that that's always the case, but I would say yes. And yeah, they're playing some of their best basketball now. How much of that was the magic of Walsh Gym? You know, AJ, you know, like the difference a building can make with Rutgers, how it can make an opponent look so bad or lift the home team up. Some of that is certainly going on here. UNLV had to travel across the country twice. They came to Princeton and won, and they went back. They beat BC. They came back, and they had no legs. So there are like circumstances there. However, if you watch enough basketball, you know that this group is motivated to play. They're playing together. They're galvanized. They look like they have something to prove, and they're going to be a favorite against Georgia. Georgia's not that good. So the chances are real that they could be playing to cut down the nets in Indianapolis on Thursday, and that would be a really meaningful thing. Is it the NCAA tournament? No, but it would be a meaningful thing for the program, the same way like Rutgers getting to the final, NIT final in 04 in the Garden was a big deal, and like the Garden was clad fully red for that. So people still talk about that finally with Quincy Doobie and Ricky Shields, and so this kind of moment is unfolding here for the Hall now.
Commendable, to say the least, what Shaheen Holloway has been able to do, but the motivational aspect, I think you cannot undercut that. It is huge to be able to recalibrate mentally and lock back in and try to put yourself in a position to play championship basketball. It doesn't matter what tournament it is. I think that's a really good point, Jared. We saw that first round exit for Rutgers a couple years ago against Hofstra, and I think that all boiled down to mentality in the NIT. Keeping along that.
You would know that, AJ. I mean, you've been in those shoes, what it's like in that locker room when a season ends, when you have to turn the page, when motivations vary. So yeah, like you know that better than anybody, that a lot of this is will. And you're exhausted at the end of a long season, I'm sure. Beaten up, bruised, and the way you played the game, AJ, you must have been shot, you know? So you know what that's like. And so it is impressive to see how they've pushed that motivational button.
Turning the page, I think that's a really good segue. You mentioned obviously keeping a pulse on not only Seton Hall and the great things they're doing and all the phenomenal basketball players from the Garden State, even on other teams, but have you experienced an off season, you know, with all the storylines of the NCAA tournament and the NIT transitioning to now the transfer portal, as turbulent as, you know, what we've been experiencing now over the last couple of weeks from your perspective?
Well, I thought last season was bad, right? So last offseason was really the first offseason with what we now can just safely call full-blown free agency in the sport. And that was super turbulent. And I mean, it was hard for me to follow. I can't imagine what it was like for like the coaches in the program or the people who were involved directly. This is looking like it's even worse. And we're just at the tip of the iceberg, AJ. So like Rutgers, you know, the focus is on them with that because they finished their season first, right? So they've already had a full-scale roster turnover almost. There's only like two or three guys left from their roster last season. This is unheard of in the past. And also, it's not the way Steve Peichel has run his program. Like, he has always been a developmental guy, come in, get better, stick with it, work your way up. And so this is just the way the world is now. It's nothing to do with Steve Peichel. It's nothing to do with, like, Rutgers in particular. This is happening everywhere. It's going to happen to Seton Hall when their season ends. It just hasn't happened yet because it's still playing. So you're going to see massive amounts of turnover. And no, there's nothing. There's been nothing this turbulent. No. And so the transfer portal being open while teams are still playing in the postseason is wild. But this is the way the sport is now. I feel like we could have found a happy medium. I'm not like, I don't know the answers really. They're complex answers, right? It's not something that can be legislated in a, you know, 100-word tweet, but I don't have the answers, but it's, could we have found a happy medium between the players having no rights and what is now like total chaos, which doesn't seem like it's good for anybody. There must have been, but it seems like that ship has sailed. Can the toothpaste be put back in the tube? I don't know, but what I would say is like Rutgers fans are down on their team because so many people are leaving. But if you look across the sport, like this is what's going on to almost every team that's not playing. I don't think it's Rutgers specific. I think it's a sport-wide issue that somehow has to get addressed. Turbulent is a good word, and it's going to get, you know, it's March 29th, guys. It's going to get even crazier over the next month until the portal closes in early May.
Definitely a byproduct of an early season ending. I think it accentuates the players who are making those decisions, you know, as soon as that season concludes. So obviously Rutgers is in the headlines with multiple players making that decision to jump in. I'd be interested to see if there is parameters put in place to at least allow for a grace period for teams that are continuing to play deep into March.
Yeah, and what you hear about is tampering. No, look, tampering has always happened, okay? This is not some new thing. But the fact that teams are still playing and there's coaches doing, you know, calling players, and there's no enforcement of anything. So like the NCAA does two things, right? They run the tournaments, which I think we could all agree they do a good to great job of. And it's not just March Madness, but it's all the sports tournaments, you know, the Frozen Four, the College World Series, all of them. That's important. It's a big job and they do a good job of it. But the other thing is the enforcement, and there's just no enforcement. Because no one wanted any enforcement. It's not like the NCAA just gave up. Like the members didn't want it. So there's no enforcement and there's no rules. And yeah, could there be some better way to do this to maybe just ease off the tampering? I don't have the answers, but it seems extremely unhealthy. And so for Rutgers, the alternative was last year, two guys left in late May and early June. And it really ruined their season. AJ, that they had two guys who were going to be starters leave that late and they didn't have replacements for them. They had to like dig for replacements. So the difference is Steve Peichel, he's been upfront about this. He's been proactive in telling guys who might transfer, if you're going to do it, please do it now so I can at least attempt to replace you. I go back to the Seton Hall example from last year with Tyrese Samuel. He walks into Shaheen Holloway's office 3 to 4 days after the season ends and says, I'm going to transfer. They had their little negotiation back and forth. He leaves in March. It gives him time to find Jaden Bediako from Santa Clara, who has filled that gap well. But they're able to find that guy because it was late March. So at least Steve, and I talked to him the other day, he's at least grateful that he has now a leg up compared to last year and some time to find the pieces to replace the people who are leaving. Can he? We'll see. But at least he has a chance now. They had no chance last year. But is there a better way to do this, AJ? There has to be. There has to be, but I don't know what it is, but it doesn't seem like opening the transfer portal while teams are still playing is a great idea. That seems like a bad idea. That's one thing that strikes me as problematic.
Lifting up the curtains, what's a day in a life for Jerry Corino, one of the hardest working guys in this area throughout the tournament? How many eyes do you have on different games? And then putting a period on that, what's your favorite storyline that you've been following? Maybe former players transferring to other schools or Jersey kids, playing on one of these teams that are still remaining.
This time of year, there is no day like one just leads into the next. Sometimes I forget what day it is. The only reality is my kids are in school at 12 and 14 years old, so I have to kind of keep track of that. But AJ, I'll just give you Wednesday, for example. The game was at 7 o'clock, the Seton Hall NIT game, which was good. It was early, thank goodness. But still, I'm there till midnight, doing a thorough job, making sure every I is dotted and T is crossed. And then I get home at 1:30, and you can't just, I mean, when you played, you can't just go to bed after being one of these games. Like you're pretty, you there's a lot of energy still coursing through your veins. So I finally get to bed around 2:30. I'm up at 5:30. My kids got to get on the bus at like 6:40 and 7 o'clock. So I'm up at 5:30, get my kids on the bus. My daughter gets on at 7:05. And then like the phone starts buzzing and the email starts popping and the social media starts scrolling and you don't get back to sleep. So when this goes on, days on end and weeks on end in March, there is no day. There is no typical day, right? But I do. So when I started doing this in 2003, my mandate was to cover Seton Hall. We had a separate writer, Keith Sargent, who you guys know, good longtime friend of mine, covering Rutgers. And then eventually, as Rutgers football became huge, like Keith did one of that full time. And then I took Rutgers and Seton Hall in 06. I took on the Rutgers and Seton Hall beats together. And then after that, slowly I started to add the New Jersey's mid-majors. And I just kind of appointed myself. No one ever told me to do this. I just kind of appointed myself as the person covering all eight of New Jersey's men's Division I college basketball teams and keeping an eye on the other aspects of college basketball because no one was really doing it. Like there's great coverage of high school sports in New Jersey. There's great coverage of Rutgers football. There's a lot of tons of coverage of the pros, the NFL teams, et cetera. There wasn't really anybody covering statewide college basketball. So I kind of appointed myself to the job. And so one of the things I try to do, as you alluded to, AJ, is keep track of the players who've gone elsewhere, players who played high school ball in New Jersey who are playing elsewhere. So I like to watch the NCAA games anyway. I'm a hoop head, right? But I really was watching Alabama, North Carolina last night because they have two guys who played high school basketball in New Jersey who are prominent in the game. Aaron Estrada from Woodbury, who, by the way, played for Shaheen Holloway at St. Peter's for a year and was the MAC Rookie of the Year. He scores 19 points and hits some huge shots for Alabama. And then for North Carolina, Elliott Cadeau is in the starting lineup and he scored 8 points. He's a Bergen Catholic alum. And actually, when I went down to the NCAA tournament a couple of weeks ago, I sought out Elliott in the locker room after they beat Wagner to talk to him and write a little something for the Bergen Record. But I enjoy keeping track of these guys. So if Aaron Estrada reaches the Final Four with, if they win the next round, which they could do, right? It's Clemson, it's a toss-up game. I'll probably reach out to him and do an interview and do something on him. I think that's a fun local angle that maybe no one else had. Like, obviously, a lot's getting written about Cam Spencer. And I get it. Of course, he's playing for UConn and they're the juggernaut. And he went to Rutgers last year. But to me, like, is anyone going to write about Aaron Estrada? He's a Jersey guy. And so I think that might be a nice story that I will do if he makes the Final Four.
Jerry Carino is with us here from Gannett Newspapers and from the Jersey Jump Shot podcast. I don't think I've ever asked you this, and before we let you go, I wanted to. What got you into the sport in the first place? Was there a game, a moment, a person that kind of led you to college basketball?
It's a good story. Okay, so I grew up. So my father is a first generation American, Italian American. His grandparents emigrated from Italy. His father was a bartender and an old school like Yankees Giants New York guy. Like the Yankees or the Giants, the NFL or the Major League Baseball was always on the TVs in the bar, corner bar on Cole Street in Jersey City, Uncle Mike's Tavern. Okay, I got all the details for you. It's still there. It's called something else now. The bar is still there, though. It's still a bar. And so my grandfather grew up in that like old world baseball, New York football environment. Basketball never was really in the picture. And then, in the 80s, I remember my father just happening across college basketball on CBS and ESPN when we got cable in the early years. And what really attracted my father to the game was that, again, you have to put things into context. Like, he's this old school mentality Italian guy. Was the guys whose names ended in vowels who were prominent in his sport, starting with Dick Vitale, who was a New Jersey guy with this loud voice, this enthusiasm for the sport. And then there was Louis Carnesecca, and then there was Rick Pitino, and then there was Rolly Massimino and PJ Carlissimo, and all these guys whose names ended in vowels. And Jim Valvano, I should mention, because the 83 championship game, I think, was the first one we watched. Because my father's like, look at this Italian guy from New York. He's going to win a national title. So really, all the enthusiasm about that is what got my father hooked on the sport, which in turn got me hooked on the sport. And the epilogue to that story is years later, and St. John's being great in the mid-80s was a big part of that, right? New York team, Italian coach, amazing group of players. So the epilogue to that is about 6-7 years ago, Dick Vitale came and spoke at a banquet that the Asbury Park Press hosted for their all-shore athletes. He was the guest speaker, Vitale. I brought my father and introduced him and told him, you know, told Dick that, told Dickie V that's he's the reason we watch college basketball. My father started putting on the TV to listen to him and then learned all this stuff. And Vitale said to my father, your son does a great job. I follow him so closely. Whether he does or not, it doesn't matter. That's all my father had to hear. He made my father's year. And so it was a really nice full circle moment. So that's the story. You know, my father, Pops, is 78 now, and he still watches all the games. He's still just as into it as he always was. And like during the games I'm covering, I try not to pay attention to my phone, right? But every time there's a questionable officiating call against Seton Hall or Rutgers, he's texting, complaining. I mean, I can't even tell you the stuff that's in the text messages. So he's still got the love for the game, but that's where it all began.
Jerry, great stuff. You know how much I appreciate you and always spending so much time with me on the Seton Hall broadcast and now guesting on our new show here. We're trying to kind of pick up the mantle and, you know, continue what you've done on the Jersey Jump Shot. We cover all 8 teams as well and across radio and whatnot, and try to give some love to the Bashir Masons and the Donald Copelands and the Brett McConnells and all the great stories out there. There's a lot of them in New Jersey and this area. So I will talk to you soon, and we'll be following Seton Hall next week.
Thanks, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. It's awesome.
All right. Great stuff. That's Jerry Carino joining us. Take a time out. Be back with more on Crashing the Boards on Fox Sports Radio, New Jersey. This is Crashing the Boards. Dave and Austin with you, Fox Sports Radio, New Jersey, Fox Sports Radio, Jersey Shore, talking college hoops at the best time of year. And joining us now is one of the preeminent analysts in college basketball. He does the Big East games on Fox, a former UConn star, former NBA player with the Nets and the Cavs. It's our buddy Donnie Marshall. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I mean, this time of year is, for me, amazing. Watching college basketball, the best teams that are left, and then getting ready for golf. So I think it'd be more perfect for me.
Well, let's start with your alma mater, who has been steamrolling people by an average of 23 points a game over the last 2 NCAA tournaments. Yeah. As we record this on Friday, they've just beaten San Diego State by 30. They seem unstoppable. You have seen every UConn team for the last 30 plus years. How would you compare this group to some of the other great teams you've seen and played on?
Well, I would say hands down the best UConn team we've ever seen. Best UConn team I've ever seen. That's including guys, one team had 4, maybe 5 NBA players. My team's had 4 or 5 NBA players. This team to me is hands down the best UConn Huskies men's team we've ever seen. I think the way that they play together unselfishly, 2, the way that they kind of, they know 2 steps ahead of where not only the defense is going to be, but offense, but where their teammates are going to be. And then I think I think the last thing you talk about is their skill level, their talent. We know they have that. Every team that's playing this time of year has great talent. But you have to give the coaching staff their just due. The stuff that they run, the plays that they – sometimes it's free flowing. They beat you in transition. Sometimes it's in the half court. Sometimes it's ugly and they score. You know, it's an awesome thing to watch when Donovan Clingan struggles in the first half of a game and they're still up nine, or they struggle shooting from deep and they're up nine, because they have so many options. There's so many pieces that can give you 5, 6, 8 points in a little flurry. And then you forget, oh, they have a good freshman in Steph Castle. Oh, they go to their bench and they're a different look with Samson Johnson. So I would go argue with anyone that this is the best UConn team.
One of the more difficult things in all of sports is winning at the Division I college basketball level. And it seems to be that this team is mentally locked in, and that starts at the CEO of the program and Coach Hurley. What have you seen throughout the year of how he's been able to get this team up each and every game?
You know, he coaches. I said this in the preseason too. I got to see a couple. I was fortunate enough for him to let me in to see a couple practices before season started. And the way he was coaching then was like he hadn't won anything. Like he was still trying to prove to not only, you know, the fans and the world, but to himself that, you know, I'm a champion. Or there was no arrogance, you know, that there was no entitlement. And I think sometimes when and I've been around coaches, I have a lot of coaches who I'm close with, you know, 2, 3, 4 of my closest friends are NBA coaches and college coaches, head coaches. And there's some arrogance that comes with winning a championship. I didn't see that from Dan Hurley or his staff. You know, they approached the season as if they hadn't won anything. And then I think we say that as athletes and coaches. Oh, we haven't that was last year. We haven't done anything this year. But you know in the back of your mind that you have a different respect for the people when you win a national title. 1-2, man. I mean, it's just it's something that most coaches can't fathom winning one. But to be in a position to really realistically, legitimately being able to win a second one back-to-back is phenomenal. I think that's what makes Jim Calhoun so special, is that he won 3, and obviously Kevin Ollie won 1. Winning 3 is amazing. It's a feat itself. But to win it back-to-back in this day and age with the portal and everyone jumping ship, I read yesterday, I think I might even be behind, that over 1,000 players already in the portal. And we're still trying to get through the NCAA tournament. So in this day and age, to be able to back it up, obviously they haven't won it yet, but I don't see anyone really getting in their way. But the approach that he's taken from the start of this season till now is just an approach of, hey, I'm poor and I'm trying to make some money. Just like we, you know, we always go out, normal people go out and hustle, get a side hustle. It feels like that's kind of how Coach Hurley has this entire season. We haven't anything. Even though we know they have, that's the approach I think you have to take. Even NCAA committee, you know, listen to the players. I heard him talk about this a few last week, saying that, you know, we got the hardest road and maybe the committee has given it to us a little bit. There may be no truth to that, but when you tell players that, we just as players, we're like, okay, it's against the world again. Now we're continuing to try to prove to people that we can win this thing again. Special.
One player that folks in New Jersey know very well in the Garden State is Cam Spencer. I had a chance to call his games at Rutgers and really appreciated his professional nature. And he was a consummate gym rat, always the first guy out on the court getting up extra reps. What has he brought to this team's dynamic? Everybody talks about his toughness, but are you seeing anything else?
Yeah, you know, the toughness thing is the obvious thing. Really hard on himself. Players today just don't really show that care and passion about being meticulous. I think like Cam Spencer, obviously he's older, so you get that from older players. I had an opportunity this summer at my golf event. I invited Cam and Donovan Clingan, and Cam's a really good golfer. He's like a 4 or 5 handicap. And so I had some of my old teammates there, Ray Allen, Scott Burrell, and they got to spend some time with Cam before he even really stepped on the floor for you. This was August. I just was explaining how special the place was. And I followed him at Rutgers as well. My former UConn alum who showed me around on my recruiting trip, Steve Peichel, the head coach at Rutgers, everyone knows, in Jersey, and Carl Hobbs, who was the assistant, who was also my assistant at UConn when I played. They had given me, you know, really the scouting report on Cam, and I've done a few Rutgers games as well last season, so I kind of knew how special it was. There was a point where they said, you know, if he's making shots, we win. If he's missing, we struggle. And as a player, when you hear that, it's like, wow, I know I can do more if I'm missing shots. You know, you don't just want to be that one guy who's pigeonholing and say, if he's making shots, he's great. If not, put him on the bench. And Cam, to me, has evolved into an all-around terrific basketball player, not just a shooter. You hear these broadcasters in NCAA tournament say he's a shooter. And look, we all want to be a shooter. We all want people to think we can make shots. But to me, for a guy like that, guy like Ray Allen, another Hall of Famer UConn player, to say they're a shooter, to me, is disrespectful in a way. I know that sounds kind of backwards, but Cam Spencer, Ray Allen, those guys are more than just shooters. And Cam is showing everyone that. His mid-range game, his toughness, his uncanny way of getting into the paint, making you foul him from behind, mid-range floaters, he can run your offense. Now I'm his agent. Now I'm trying to get him drafted, it sounds like. But all these things are what Cam Spencer has shown the world this season, I think even better than last year at Rutgers. And, again, you got to give credit to Coach Hurley, Kamani Young, the assistant, Luke Hurley, and Tom Moore for putting these guys in those positions. And not no disrespect to Coach Peichel's staff, but this year this system is running differently, and it gives Cam Spencer more freedom to show he's more than just a shooter.
Donnie Marshall is with us here on Crashing the Boards. And before we let you go, I want to talk about the Big East in general, because Creighton and Marquette also looking strong. Seton Hall playing their best basketball of the year, perhaps, demolishing teams in the NIT, making it to the Final Four of that tournament. You called these games all season long. Is it fathomable at all to you that there are only three teams in the NCAAs from the Big East this year?
Yeah, when I heard, I think last night I heard Mountain West six teams.
Yep.
Which it shocked me. I'm like, and again, maybe because I grew up in the Big East, so talking about that arrogance, not entitlement, but arrogance. We know how awesome our conference is and has been. So you just would expect we deserve more because we're beating the crap out of each other every single night. And I think the same could be said about Big 12 and the SEC and the power conferences. But I think what surprised me more was that there were conferences, smaller conferences, that had more teams than we did. And if you would go through 2-3 weeks of what the Big East goes through in the middle of the season, they're mauling each other, and all the coaches in our conference understand that. And look, there's no perfect way, I think, to pick these teams. The NCAA tournament committee, I think, does a really nice job. I'm probably one of the rare people that thinks they get it right most years. But unless you're living it every single night, which they probably can't, you're never going to get, we're never going to feel like we've gotten just do. I think the message is being sent, and Seton Hall continues to play well. And you know, I'm obviously a Shaheen Holloway. No one could ever. I'd fight to the death for that guy. I've known him a long time. And the way that he is not only finished, you know, the way that he finished the season with this team, not really relying heavily on a bench, didn't have much of a bench, you know, to keep them playing. And focused on still winning. Sometimes we say, well, if I can't get that, then I don't want anything. That's the hardest part for coaches this time of year when you're not in the NCAA tournament. So I got to give Shaheen his flowers, because to be able to coach and to be able to keep grinding, you know, it's not the NCAA championship, but it is a championship. I think that to me is one of the hardest things in college basketball. In terms of our other teams, there are Providence, you know, Xavier they struggled, but Providence is the one team I think that comes to mind that you think, wow, they won some big games. They played a good schedule. I think when you put in that they had a first-year head coach, a lot of turmoil went on with that team, when your head coach doesn't just leave, but he goes to a rival in conference, I think that has to add a little something to the you know, when you weigh where this team came from and where they could have been. And I think the NCAA tournament may have missed that on Providence. I thought they definitely deserved to be in. But the teams that are in, you know, we said this before, Marquette and Creighton, obviously UConn's kind of in another stratosphere right now. If Marquette and Creighton were in the Final Four, no one would be surprised. You wouldn't. You just, you know, I don't think just Big East people. I think people around the country, obviously people in Omaha and people in Milwaukee, but we wouldn't be surprised if they're in the Final Four. That's kind of what I'm – that is the best way. When you win, we say winning solves a lot of problems. It heals most things. But winning also opens eyes to people like the tournament committee to be like, wow, we may have overlooked what those other teams, the Big East, were doing. When you see the success that teams are having, they're still in the tournament. So, and you know, it's what it's all about. Jay Wright, you got to thank him for, you know, the wins that he had the years past. It really kept the Big East on the national, in the national spotlight. And I think these three teams, Creighton, UConn, and Marquette, are continuing to do that.
There's no doubt about it. Well, we always enjoy you watching the games, and we appreciate all the time here. And I enjoyed hanging out with you a little bit off the air this year, talking music and golf and all of your other interests, and look forward to doing that more.
Thanks, Dave. I'm still looking for an invite, man. Look, I'm not going to pick up a mic and start singing with you, although I might, but I'm still looking for my ticket. When you're performing, I don't know if your fans know that you are, this is your side hustle. I don't know if you know that.
But I'm, that's right. I'll be singing The Clash at a neighborhood bar near you.
I love it. That's on my bucket list, to come see you perform. Man,
all right, I'll send you the list. All right, that's Donnie Marshall joining us here on Crashing the Boards. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick time out and be back with more on Fox Sports Radio New Jersey.
Welcome back to Crashing the Boards with Dave Popkin and Austin Johnson, and a phenomenal show. So many different insights. It's so crazy. When you look at the big picture of the season, it seems like this huge monstrosity, and then you get down to the end of March, and it's like, wow, that went very, very quickly, man. How are you feeling? Any predictions? Obviously, we have some games today to get through to work towards the championship game, but I'm excited for that Illinois-UConn matchup. I think that is going to be a high-scoring affair, and Terrence Shannon Jr. has been a player that's been popping off the screen each and every game.
No doubt. Looks like a pro, not an easy guy to root for, obviously. Yeah. The allegations against him, but incredible player, and certainly helped them ice that game to go into the Elite Eight. And UConn, I think, is a juggernaut that will not be stopped. I think that their top eight guys are better than everybody else's top eight guys. They have a center that's very tough to match up against. They have several NBA players on that team. They probably have the best coach. It's been a thing to watch for sure. So I'm just excited about Seton Hall as well. You know, as we leave for Indianapolis, they take on Georgia in the first round of the NIT. It's a game that they should win. They were better than Georgia this year. Georgia went 6-12 in the SEC. Seton Hall went 13-7 in the Big East. Seton Hall has been more dominant in their wins in the tournament. So hopefully they can make it to a final game, maybe against Indiana State, against a very rabid Sycamore hometown crowd at Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. That would be lit, as the kids say. So I'm looking forward to this week.
That would be awesome. They have one of the coolest and most entertaining players on that team as well. I've heard some crazy nicknames for him. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and things of all that nature. That would be a phenomenal matchup. But yeah, I mean, with only, you know, Seton Hall being the last of the teams to root for from the Garden State area. Don't tell anybody from Rutgers, but secretly I got to keep you know, pushing for these guys to move forward.
Yeah, it's a good thing this is not on the radio. All right, man, that's it for this week. Appreciate it. Great job. And look forward to our final show of the year next week when we'll talk about the Final Four and how it shook out for Seton Hall and where Rutgers stands with all their transfers and all the other stuff going on with the mid-majors as well. We'll touch on everybody next week in our final show of the year. For Austin Johnson, I'm Dave Popkin. We thank all of the guys that helped with our production, Mike Cohen, Jack Myatt, and Alexander the Great, Alex Garrett. We thank our guests, Jerry Carino and Donnie Marshall. For AJ, I'm Dave. We'll talk to you next Sunday, and you can check out all of our shows archived on the Fox Sports Radio New Jersey website. See ya.
You've been listening to Crashing the Boards on Fox Sports Radio New Jersey. Austin and Dave will be back next week with some great scoops for your college hoops. Only on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports New Jersey.